Have you been following the World Cup? Will you be watching today or recording or avoiding the game this afternoon when the United States takes on Belgium? We are going to talk about the popularity of soccer right now and wonder if it will continue when the World Cup is over. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July 1st. Our guest says soccer is definitely becoming more mainstream and the TV ratings have been good, but he still doesn't think soccer is poised to become America's next major TV sport. Do you? Do you wish it were? Why are you caught up in World Cup fever if you are? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest was interviewed for an article on World Cup fever that we found in the LA Times. He says soccer is definitely trending upward, but he doubts the sustained popularity of the game in the U.S. after the World Cup. He is Andrew Billings, the director of the University of Alabama Program in Sports Communication and the Ronald Reagan Chair of Broadcasting. His areas of expertise include sports media and mega sporting event coverage. He is also the author of 9 books, including The Fantasy Sport Industry, Games Within Games. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. I have to admit, and I will confess, I have not been watching the World Cup. I have not been watching each game, but I have been following the followers in the fever. And it's really quite amazing here in Madison. I mean, various establishments are packed to the gills with people watching, and people are flying flags outside their apartment balconies, and there's all sorts of chanting and cheering and excitement over the World Cup. And I guess I don't remember this 4 years ago. Is this new?
Well, no, it's definitely peaking. We've got the perfect storm here, which is we do have a more competitive U.S. team, but also we have a really good time zone in which this is occurring in Brazil. And so the games, instead of being at 4 in the morning or at 11 at night, they're at a time that people can consume them. People are finding more interest in soccer. There are more appealing personalities on our team, and it's that confluence of events that has made this, I think, the most popular World Cup in U.S. history.
Yeah, and the TV ratings are right up there.
Oh, definitely. And truthfully, this is one of the hardest things that we can, you know, in the ratings industry that we can have to pin down, which is a mega sporting event, because people consume them so differently. So, you know, with U.S. versus Portugal, we're saying 25 million watched it. That's a combined ESPN, ABC, and Univision rating. But even then, we don't really know about all those sports bars, about all these viewing parties that are really getting large clusters of people along with all the mobile devices. So it's very hard to track that, much more difficult than any other type of rating.
So who's going to win today, the U.S. or Belgium?
Well, I always rely on Nate Silver at 538. You know, he can help predict an election. And he also does a lot with sports. Right now they've got it as Belgium is a slight favorite, 59% chance that Belgium wins, 41% chance that we do. Yeah, if you start looking at it and say, hey, they're going to play, if they played 10 games, we'd win 4 of them, it gives you a sense of it's not quite a coin flip. It's a little bit against us, but we've got a real shot today.
So I believe we can win. Isn't that one of the chants?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's been a growing enthusiasm for the way the U.S. has played and has shown that, at least in soccer, it's kind of, you know, everyone assumes the best team always wins. And especially in soccer, that's simply not true. The best team right now in the World Cup, at least statistically, is Brazil. They're currently a 40% chance of winning the World Cup, but that means there's a 60% chance that they won't. So there's a reason to tune into these. These are not dumb deals at all for any of the contests, including the ones today.
So please help a novice And the last game the U.S. played, the U.S. loses, but it's still advanced. Why did that happen?
Well, we were already second in our group. So the top two out of a group advanced. And so we were already second, and because of the other results, no one was able to move in. The comparison I use often is, let's say, in college football, which is more popular in this country. Let's say you're ranked number two in the country, and you lose, but the teams behind you also lose. You might stay at number two, and that's the equivalent of what happened here.
And so now, though, this is called the knockout round?
Right. This is win or go home. So at this point, it's very clear. There's no losing and still advancing. And they will play, if they're tied after regulation, they'll play another 30 minutes of extra time. If they're still tied at that point, they go to something called penalty kicks, and they'll go there until they produce a winner. So it's great drama, and we will have a winner today. There's no draw left in the World Cup.
And is it true no one really gave the U.S. much of a shot at doing anything significant during the World Cup? And so that's one of the reasons why, we're all so excited?
Well, I mean, the U.S. Has a world ranking of 14. So the fact that they're in the equivalent of the Sweet 16, you would say, should not be surprising. But because we got this draw into a group that was called the Group of Death because of Germany, Portugal, and Ghana, the presumption was that we were not going to make it through. And again, according to 538, I believe we had a 34% chance of advancing out of that group. So we've done something that was against the odds, and that's nice and that's terrific. But also, this is a solid team. And part of the reason that this group was called the Group of Death was because the United States was in it. So they can be really proud of what they've done so far.
So what happened to all the griping I've heard in the past that, soccer is boring, and no one really likes soccer. That's just not the case.
Well, I think it goes to the core of, all right, why are people watching? And I don't think they're watching because all of a sudden soccer is really compelling. I think they're watching because it's all wrapped in the American flag. Mm. And that's the reason we watch the Olympics. That's the reason why we have these sports that maybe we aren't that interested in otherwise, but you wrap it in the American flag, and the next thing you know, we're very interested in gymnastics or track and field or figure skating, but just once every 4 years. So there's this whole second tier of sports that aren't mainstream parts of our regular sports culture, but at least for a given time and circumstance, they are topic A in these discussions.
So if the U.S. loses today, where the TV ratings aren't going to be going through the roof after today?
Well, they won't go through the roof. I still think you're going to have a record rating for the final match.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that point, we actually, the ratings for non-U.S. games are up as well. But if the U.S. is eliminated, certainly that's going to cause ESPN to take a hit. But boy, if the U.S. continues on, we are looking at record ratings until they're knocked out.
Yeah, so
I've spoken to people at ESPN. They're absolutely thrilled with the numbers so far.
I'll bet they are. So if the U.S. wins, what are the next steps?
All right, so if the U.S. wins, then the next step is the quarterfinal, where we play the winner of Argentina and Switzerland. That's very likely to be Argentina. Argentina is a formidable opponent. So if the odds are slightly against us today, they would be substantially more against us in the mm-hmm. next round. But once again, it's soccer. You never know. You might have two shots on goal compared to the other team's 25. But if your two go in, then you've got a real chance.
We are talking about World Cup fever and wondering if you have it. What do you attribute to the renewed popularity of soccer too, and are you hoping that our interest in soccer continues even after the World Cup? We'll talk more with our guest whether that's going to happen. and welcome your questions and your experiences with the World Cup this year. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Andrew Billings, the director of the University of Alabama Program in Sports Communication and the Ronald Reagan Chair of Broadcasting. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. World Cup fever gets revved up again today as the United States takes on Belgium in the round of 16. We are talking with a sports media expert about the popularity of soccer right now, whether or not that soccer is likely to become America's next major sport. And we wonder what you think and what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ryan on Facebook says, I love it. I wish it was every year and not just every 4 years. So, Andrew, why is it that it's only every 4 years?
Well, soccer's got a lot of different levels to it and different layers. So there's the Euro tournament and there's things like that. And so I think it's like the Olympics. They say this is such an epic thing. We want to keep it at that epic stature. And if it were every year or even every 2 years, it wouldn't be as big. And so the fact that, if you lose this game today, you don't get another shot at it for four more years is part of what drives you to watch, the fact that it's got that epic nature to it.
Ah, that does make sense. But isn't that one of the reasons why perhaps our interest is not sustained in between World Cups?
Well, it certainly is part of it. That's where my skepticism comes in, is I think there's a lot of people who are fans of the U.S. national team, but not necessarily fans of these players once they move back to their city-based teams, or if they start, lots of our players will play overseas or in other places where they can make even more money. That's the real question. And I think it's great, and I'm not trying to be all negative with it, but, you've got to think 4 years out when the World Cup next time is in Russia. And that game that started at 1 o'clock for us this year, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, is going to start at 4 a.m. And at that point, do you get the casual fan? And that's the real question. I think you're going to get more of them, and I think we've certainly gotten more converts. So this is, if this is a stock, soccer is a buy. There's no question, especially with the growing demographic changes in this country, more and more people are going to be interested
Talk about the demographic changes and how that's going to increase the interest in soccer.
Sure. The Hispanic population has always been consuming soccer in much higher levels. So this is one of the few cases where you can say, okay, we'll get an initial rating from ESPN, and then the general formula would be add another 30-35% from Univision. No other programming option is going to have that Univision bump that you'll get there, where you'll say, all right, we're probably going to get 6 or 7 million more viewers today once we count that there. So as the demographics start to change, more and more people are going to be interested. The other thing is, there is a relationship that's not as strong as some people think between playing the sport and watching it. And certainly, really in the last 20 years, we've had a rapid growth in youth sport participation related to soccer. And lots of people are questioning whether this is going to explode even more and more parents may decide that American football is not for them, and they'll do the international football in the form of soccer instead, as they start to see issues about concussions and other injuries.
Interesting. Well, the article that we saw you quoted in, the article in the LA Times, starts. Move over, baseball and basketball. Soccer is ready to score as America's next major TV sport. And you think that it's certainly trending upward, but you think maybe that's premature to say that?
I do. And there's a lot of things there. There's lots of things that the U.S. simply doesn't understand. You know, the casual fan will watch it today, and they'll see, for instance, a running clock. The clock does not stop when the ball goes out of bounds or after a goal. And so they see celebrations, they see the clock running, and for the U.S. person to then say, okay, there's a running clock, and then when the clock's over, we're going to add more time, and we don't know when the game actually ends. That's something still jarring for the fans. But number one, I think, for Americans is we're more used to seeing scoring. And even though the games have been a little bit higher scoring here, it's still largely 2-1 instead of 1-0, or 3-2 is a high scoring game here. And I remember, you know, once I taught a Brazilian soccer player at the university, and I was talking about the scoring, and he said, well, what if we just make every goal 3 points? And then the scoring would be higher. And I said, oh,
there you go.
Get it. Now we want to see the ball go in the goal more.
Uh-huh.
So it's tough. The other thing you have to look at is at some point, something else has to give. Something has to drop for soccer to rise into our consciousness. And that presumption has always been we get more sports channels, we get more options, and that's certainly true. But where we stand right now, I will always joke with people. They'll say the three major sports in this country are football, baseball, and basketball. And I'll come back and say, truthfully, they are professional football, college football, and off-season football. That is how big football still is in this country. And you can look at examples of that. For instance, in May, coverage of the NFL draft got higher ratings than the NBA playoff games. So really,
amazing.
Everything is driven by American football. I don't see that changing, even with a lot of the health issues. People are still going to be consuming that and even off-season football at much higher rates than soccer, at least for the immediate future.
Well, Zachary on Facebook says, the games have been great. You can watch a match knowing it's going to last approximately 2 hours and not get bombarded by TV timeouts for every ball out of bounds or other stoppage. Also, the players don't celebrate every defensive play, every blip, he used a different word, or every successful pass. So I guess he kind of likes that aspect of the game.
Oh, I think for fans, the continuous nature of soccer is a lot of fun, where you can, you know, like you said, it is really great to be able to predict. Now that we're in the knockout stage, that can go longer with extra time. But at least in the early rounds, you could count on that game being slightly less than 2 hours. But there's a lot of hurdles, for instance, for programmers that come with that. The World Cup, even when it was in the U.S. 20 years ago, we were still cutting away from the match, or, you know, putting it on a smaller screen so we could still show advertisements during that 45-minute half. They've finally given up on that, and ESPN's got a different funding model than other networks that could have the World Cup, where, you know, commercials still matter, but the big thing for them is subscriber rates. So they just want big ratings for that. But it's tough. If you've got 45 minutes that you can't show a commercial, that's pretty rough on the programmer.
I bet. Well, and speaking of 45 minutes, explain that situation with one of the first games the U.S. played. Maybe it was against Portugal.
First one was Ghana.
So the one where they had the 45-minute water break, and then it ended up a tied game because of, you know, putting extra time on the clock.
Oh, that was Portugal.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yes. Well, they always will do that. First of all, the water break was unprecedented. They're always welcome to do a water break. The officials had never at a World Cup before, I believe, done the water break before USA Portugal. And yes, it was warm, but the big deal was the humidity. They were playing in the Amazon, and so,
right.
So it was really really difficult there. That wasn't the reason, though, that they added more time on. It might have been even more than that. But the way soccer works, they'll do the continuous 45 minutes, and then they will add on extra time based on an approximation of the amount of downtime that they had. That usually ranges anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes that they'll add on to that time there. And certainly that last minute for Portugal was the killer, because without that last extra minute, we would have won the game outright.
We are talking about World Cup fever. It fires up again today as the United States takes on Belgium this afternoon. Will you be watching, or will you be working? We are talking about the popularity of soccer right now and wonder if it will continue when the World Cup is over. Will it for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Tell us the appeal for you of watching the World Cup games. Or if they don't appeal to you, why do you think that is? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Andrew Billings is the director of the University of Alabama Program in Sports Communication. We'll talk more after the news. So do you love soccer or hate soccer? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the World Cup fever, which is firing up again today as the United States takes on Belgium this afternoon. And we wonder if you will be watching. Are you following the World Cup? Maybe more so than ever before. TV ratings are better than ever before for the World Cup games. We wonder what is the appeal to you or the lack of appeal to you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I guess nobody loves soccer or hates soccer, as you're not calling in all that much, though you are posting on Facebook, and we appreciate those posts. We are talking with Andrew Billings, the director of the University of Alabama Program in Sports Communication and chair of broadcasting. His areas of expertise include sports media and mega sporting event coverage. He is the author of 9 books, including The Fantasy Sport Industry, Games Within Games. He was interviewed for an article on World Cup fever that was in the LA Times. In it, he says soccer is definitely trending upward and has a lot going for it, but he does doubt the sustained popularity of the game in the U.S. after the World Cup is over. And we wonder what you think. We have a number of Facebook comments, and I wanted to start with Gary on Facebook, who says, I will be rooting for the U.S. to win, but I don't find it all that interesting to watch. Two teams kick a ball back and forth until by chance and infrequently someone makes a lucky shot and scores a goal. So that's sort of the, it's not very high scoring and super exciting, do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I'd say that's representative of a fair segment of the population. My guess is he's a fan who says, you know, you wrap it in the American flag. It's part of the cultural consciousness. I will watch it and I can follow it for 2 hours today and then not have to really pay attention for a few more days, even if we win. That's the level of commitment we're at right now. And I'll even admit, certainly it's not the sport that I can talk about most clearly. Compared to other American sports. And that's the battle you face. It's just like most people, their favorite type of music is the type of music they grew up with. The same is true for sports. If you grew up watching given team or individual sports, those are the ones that tend to follow in those decades later.
Well, conservative commentator Ann Coulter wrote a column titled, America's Favorite National Pastime, Hating Soccer, and then she proceeds to bash the sports for various reasons, including a lack of individual achievement, scoreless ties, illegal use of hands, and other things. So how widespread do you say that sentiment is?
Well, Well, she certainly makes some connections that I don't think the majority of Americans would make. I do think lots of Americans do see it as more random than other sports. And maybe it is. Maybe that's part of it. But at the same time, we follow sports like baseball that balls and strikes largely are determined by a umpire that, depending on who that umpire is, has a large or a small strike zone. We follow American football where most people would say at least on 75 or 80% of the plays there could be a holding penalty called if you wanted to. So there's a degree of randomness there too. But I understand that, you know, that's the nature of soccer, which is you might be dominating the game the majority of the way and just not have it go your way. And truthfully, most people who watch the U.S. play Ghana would say, all right, the U.S. scored in the first minute, largely was inferior to Ghana for the next 75 minutes and then managed to get a second goal there at the end. That worked in our favor that time. But that you know, some people will be upset at the randomness and some people will love that and call it unpredictable. The fact that we could still play even a Brazil and have a let's say 4-1 chance of winning that game.
You'll be happy to know, Andrew, that our lines just exploded when I said Ann Coulter. No, but they're not going to talk about Ann Coulter.
It's fine. I know what article you're talking about.
Yeah, let's go to Mike and Franklin first on the phones. Hi, Mike.
Oh, hi. How you doing, Joy?
Good.
Back in the early 80s, I was just flipping through the stations, and I happened to catch a Friday night rebroadcast of a University of Wisconsin Badger hockey game. And I never was a big fan of hockey, and I started watching that. And wouldn't you know it, that was one of the years where Jeff Sauer's team won the national championship. And I became a fan ever since. Well, I started to become a little bit disenchanted with all of the violence in NFL football. And I just happened to start watching the Barclays English Premier League, where you have most of the best players from around the world, at least from Europe and the United States and South America. And I really got hooked on soccer as a result of that, because the talent of these players was just incredible. But to be able to kick a soccer ball as far as they do, to pass it, the actual setup of the plays and positions and things, it was just something new and refreshing for me. And now to be able to see those players play on their own country's teams was really exciting. In fact, I find myself often criticizing the teams for not doing some of the things that I can see that they should be able to do. So I've become, I don't know if the term is appropriate, armchair quarterback for soccer, and it's really been lots of fun. And I am looking forward to watching the United States play this afternoon.
Thank you, Mike, for sharing that. A reaction, Andrew?
I think one thing that you get out of that is you talk about the talent level, and it is extraordinarily high, especially, you know, if people get a chance to watch the other game today and watch Argentina and watch Lionel Messi play, who most would put in the top three of the top soccer players in the world, you can tell they're at a new level. And that's one thing that I think the U.S. still faces, which is that fundamental question of, okay, you're one of the top athletes in our country. What sport do you choose? And still in this country, many times if you're one of the fastest, you're going to be a wide receiver, or, you're going to be stealing bases and baseball or whatever it is, and might not opt for soccer. So that's one of the hurdles we face in trying to be nationally relevant. It's not that we don't have good talent in this country. It's that it can really only be directed towards one sport. So we've got to find a way, if we're going to say, hey, we want to be truly one of the top soccer teams in the country, we've got to have mechanisms to identify those people and have people who are going to choose soccer over one of our other major sports.
Well, Laura on Facebook says, I love the World Cup. Soccer, football in parentheses, is the most beautiful game in the universe. Talk about love. I might be biased. I'm Argentinian Uruguayan. So can you help us understand why in the entire world soccer is the most popular game in the world, except in the United States, it's football? Why did American football become our sport and the rest of the world, it's soccer?
Well, there's a couple things there. First of all, with the popularity of soccer, I think the primary driver most people would articulate is the fact that it costs so little to play. You don't even need goals, truthfully. Mm-hmm. There's certainly places where as long as you have one soccer ball for your whole group, you don't even have to own a soccer ball. You just have to have a friend with one. Mm-hmm. As long as you have one soccer ball, you can make goals between trees. All you need is an open space and something to demarcate where you're trying to kick it to, and you've got yourself a game. That's very different than a lot of the other sports, especially when you get into sports like golf or things like that that require a large investment to play. The other thing is there in sport cultural research, we reference something called capacity theory, which is that there was a time period where everyone chose what sports they were going to adopt as a country, and then it's very hard to move something in or out of that. So from about 1890 until 1930, most countries, it wasn't like they made an overt decision, but most countries, with the advent of early forms of mass media, decided what sports they were really drawn to. And those are largely still the sports that we are drawn to today. Certainly our top team sports, basketball, baseball, and football, all had their origins right around that time. And that's the key. Many other countries, soccer became that part of the equation, so it still is. For us, for soccer to move in, something's got to move out. There's just so much capacity that you have there.
Marcus in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Marcus.
Hello. I'm enjoying the World Cup. I'm not a soccer fan, but I am now. And I want to say that I really respect their athleticism. I think that when they clocked one guy, I think he ran like 26.2 miles or something. So these guys are in great shape, and the gals too, when they play. So in American football, you know, when the punter gets hit by somebody and he tries to draw a foul and he does all the theatrics and he falls, what is it with the soccer players where – I don't even know if it's just a penalty or when they get hit, but when you watch a replay and the guy got tapped in his shin and he's sprawled all over the field and he stays down there for 5 minutes, it's kind of like the guy that bit the other guy in and he's, you know, hanging on to his jaw. It's like these theatrics. Is it just part of the game? I know they really celebrate, you know, when they do something good or make a goal, but boy, oh boy, it's like, get up already, you know? I don't know. I'm sorry to be so negative. But.
So some theatrics from the goalies, I guess, or soccer players if they get hit?
Right, right. No, the slightest trip or the slightest bump can result in a great acting aspect of it. And I completely agree. It's I forget what game I was watching a couple days ago, and there were three players all writhing on the ground, and you were saying, come on. In basketball, we have flopping where we'll have a person overreact to getting hit to try and draw the charge penalty. I think it happens even more or even more dramatically here, partly because the stakes, if that penalty is called, can be so high. So for instance, if a player is charged or given a yellow card, especially if that becomes their second yellow card that's accumulated over the course of the World Cup, they can be out not only for that match, but even for the following game. Can you imagine how much flopping we'd have in basketball if you got that penalty, if you got that foul on LeBron James, he's out of the game and you have to play the rest of the game five players against four players because they're not allowed to replace that player. That's a huge, huge game changer. And, you know, with that kind of opportunity, you're going to see people go for that opportunity even more. So I think the penalty is awfully severe. And that's the way it works in soccer. It's 11 on 11. And if someone, you know, is removed from the game, you don't get to replace them. It's now 11 on 10. And that's a huge advantage for the other team. And so they're going to try and get that advantage in any way possible.
We are talking about the World Cup, welcoming your questions about how this works, and wondering if you are caught up in the World Cup fever that is gripping many in the United States. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Andrew Billings, the director of the University of Alabama program in sports communication, and he's the Ronald Reagan Chair of Broadcasting. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest sports media expert about the World Cup and World Cup fever, and talking about while soccer is definitely becoming more mainstream and becoming more popular and trending up, our guest says that he doesn't think it's necessarily poised to become America's next major sport. And we wonder what you think and what the appeal of soccer is to you, or maybe it's the lack of appeal. Our next caller is Abdul in Madison. Hi, Abdul.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to comment on a few things. First of all, the scoring, because you don't score. I mean, if you compare it to American football, every time you score a touchdown, you add 6 points. Then you get somebody else to come and kick an extra point to make it to 7. So a 3-2 score in soccer is 21-14. It looks big, but it's the same. Why is it every 4 years? The whole world participates in qualifying. So it takes a long time for the qualifiers to come to become 32 teams. And you know, why is it so popular? It's because of colonization. A lot of countries were colonized by the British, the French, the Portuguese, the Spanish. They all play soccer. So they took it to Africa, they took it to Asia, and they took it to different parts of the world. That's all I want to say.
Well, do you like the game or not, Abdul?
Oh, I grew up playing. I'm from Sierra Leone, West Africa. I grew up playing soccer. I like it very much. There's so much to watch, so much to enjoy. You see Messi, you see Neymar from Brazil. I mean, the way those guys dribble the ball, it's so exciting. Even if you don't see a goal immediately, you still enjoy the game.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I'm glad that you called. So he had reasons for all of those things we talked about. Let's talk a little bit about the scoring. He said, you know, in football, you know, we make the touchdown 6 points and then an extra point for and thinking that yeah, it's just as exciting if a goal is made. What do you say to that, Andrew?
Right. I think he's got a very valid point. It's not necessarily about the amount of scoring as much as discernible progress to scoring. And so, for instance, a baseball game, people will still find compelling because they'll see people advance to first, second, third base. You can see the possibility of it there. Now, in soccer, part of it is because we need to increase literacy for, you know, understanding the game. But many times, you know, it's equatable to hockey where, okay, there's, you know, you've got control of the ball and you're advancing the ball. And then 10 to 15 seconds later, you know, that possibility has ended. So they see it more as, you know, the average American viewer sees it a lot more back and forth, than they see delineated progress that you see, for instance, in American football with, okay, they've got a first down, they're in the red zone, you know, you're making progress. Football also has different types of scores, you know, with field goals and safeties and yeah, 2-point conversions, to the point that there's different strategy involved. Whereas with soccer, there's just one type of score, a goal, and it's worth 1 point. But no, it's a valid point there. It's not just about scoring, it's about seeing that progress or seeing, oh, here's a possibility of something big happening.
So when a player is kicking the soccer ball down the field, that's called dribbling?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't know that. Yes. Well, we have other, I know you had other points, but we have other callers too. So let's go to David in Madison. Hi, David.
Good morning. It is the most beautiful game in the universe. And I grew up watching it, playing it. I'm very excited and looking forward to this game today. I think people forget that soccer was actually a fairly big thing here, too. Plus, it also doesn't enjoy the monopoly, government-sponsored, by the way, that baseball and basketball and football enjoy. But I had the good fortune of growing up in South Florida and being able to play year-round. Also had a local soccer team that afforded me the opportunity to see the likes of Pelé and the great Franz Beckenbauer and Johan Cruyff and any number of other of the game's greats play here in the United States when they played for the New York Cosmos.
Yeah, I sure do remember Pelé. Andrew, a reaction to that?
Well, I do think when we talk about individuals, that's, you know, when people say, what's going to make soccer mainstream in this country? I think being successful in a World Cup certainly would help. But even larger would be having that one singular celebrity that rises above soccer and is, you know, put on the pages of everything from Us Magazine to you know, any other publication you can imagine. And you know, the joke always is you'll know when that happens because they'll be referenced in a single name, whether it's Pelé or Ronaldo or Neymar. You'll know because you don't even need a first name or a last name. You just need one, because that is that singular icon. And we're a celebrity-driven culture. So if we have a celebrity that truly is transcendent in soccer, that's really going to move the needle for the United States.
Very short on time, but we would love to put Jack from Madison on. Hi, Jack.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry to have to ask you to be as brief as possible, but your story sounds very, very nice.
Well, I love soccer. I was taught, my dad's in his 90s. He taught me to play. I'm in my 60s, and our whole family, kids, three kids, and my wife, my kids are in their 20s, and we all play, and we absolutely love it. We record the games, watch them at night when we get home, and we're rooting for teams like Costa Rica that haven't moved on in many years, and it's just a huge joy to us, and I hope others will continue to like it as much as we do.
Thank you so much, Jack. Family affair there. 30 seconds, Andrew. You think that soccer is popular but not the next major American sport?
Oh, it could be major, but I think we're talking decades more than anything that's going to really change there. Real quickly, I'll just say, you know, we have this debate every 4 years when Olympic hockey does incredibly well in a gold medal game or something like that, and we'll get a big rating and we'll say, oh, that's going to goose the ratings. Rarely does it.
Yeah, I got it. Thank you so much. Andrew Billings with the University of Alabama. This is the Ideas Network.